Welcome to the Transatlanticist at the Americazentrum in Hamburg. I'm your host, Andrew Sola, and today we're going to discuss the German reaction to Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential election. And we'll also get a hot take on the collapse of the German government. Here with me today is our fantastic expert on German politics, Christina Neuhaus. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you.
It's been a busy week for you, yes?
Yes, you could say that again.
Christina has been working as a political correspondent for 2 decades. For the last 12 years, she has been working for the AFP. She has a large portfolio that includes the Free Democrats, the FDP. We'll hear about them today. The Left, Die Linke, also them. And more recently, the BSW, the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht. And we discussed her and this new party in a previous episode. She also reports on the Finance Ministry and the Justice Department. And in January, she will start working for the EPD, the Evangelische Pressedienst. And now for a plug alert, Christina also hosts the seriously informative and seriously fun podcast, Unter der Kuppel, which explains what's going on in the German lower house of parliament, the Bundestag. If you understand German and want to understand how the Bundestag works and what laws they are debating, do what I do and listen to her podcast once a week and stay informed. A link is in the show notes. All right, let's cast our memories back to the morning of Wednesday, November 6th. How did Germans wake up to the news of Trump's victory on Wednesday morning?
Well, when most people woke up, the news wasn't that for sure yet. It looked like the votes were leaning towards Donald Trump, but it wasn't clear yet that that was going to be the outcome in the end. So I looked it up, and I think the breaking news over here that Donald Trump had apparently won the presidential election was around 11:30 in the morning. So around lunchtime, let's say. And I was surprised, but I heard from a lot of people that they were not that surprised. Maybe I had just tuned out the possibility that this was going to happen again. I was not prepared for that, but a lot of my colleagues said, well, yes, I feared this was going to happen.
Okay, and the German government, of course, needs to react pretty quickly. And what was the German government's official reaction publicly?
I think the first one to actually speak publicly was the foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock. She had just come back from a trip to Ukraine, actually, and she spoke at the airport, at the Berlin airport, just as she stepped off her plane from that trip. And she said something that Chancellor Scholz later echoed. She congratulated Donald Trump, and she put a lot of emphasis on cooperation. She talked about the transatlantic friendship, that it had been going on for so many decades, and that it was strong, and that it was important, and that it needed to go on, basically. So that was what Scholz also said a very short time after that. He said, yeah, I congratulate him and I will work with him. And there is a lot of issues that we need to tackle together. So they all tried to call for cooperation, basically. Like, let's try and work together. Parentheses, even though we disagree on a whole lot of issues. They didn't say that, but that's in the background, obviously.
Yeah, there are two strands of their responses, as you said. One is that we are close partners and will be close partners, and close partners have differences. Indeed, Annalena Baerbock, who is a Green politician, said, as in any good partnership, there are undoubtedly political differences. And so an honest and above all intensive exchange is more important than ever. So I think we see this acknowledgement of political differences, and there's hopefully some idea that there will be common ground that we can work with. Both Scholz and Baerbock did say similar things about security, though.
Yes.
Scholz said the European Union must stand close together and act in a united manner. And also Baerbock said, for me, for us, it is clear we Europeans will now have to take on even more responsibility for security policy. What do you make of those comments?
Yeah, that's right. That was like the other angle, basically. So there was a message toward the United States, but then there was also a message towards Europe, basically, and also Germany itself, to say we really need to get our act together and be more independent security-wise, which obviously isn't that easy or fast to achieve. But it's interesting because that is the point that had been made before the election as well. Like when people talked about what is going to happen, what if Donald Trump wins? But even if Kamala Harris was going to win, you know, people said she isn't going to be that super easy to work with maybe either. So anyway, whatever the outcome, we need to make Europe stronger and we need to be more united and we need to have more like weight in terms of the military and also diplomatic work, you know. But if Donald Trump wins, it's going to be even more important. And then that happened. And that's why those statements echoed that, you know, that's a big issue. Because if you think back to 2016, and what happened back then when Trump was first elected president, everybody in Europe said the same thing, you know, and said, like, we need to work together more and we need to be stronger, we need to be more independent. Not that much happened to achieve that, you know. I mean, it's not easy and you can't do it quickly. And yeah, here we are 8 years later and it's basically the same story.
The first, I think, official ministers meeting, not over the phone. I think Macron and Scholz met on the phone soon after the election was decided. But the first sort of official meeting was the German defense minister flew to Paris to meet the French defense minister. Do you know what happened in that meeting?
I actually don't. But it's interesting.
We can assume.
Yeah, I mean, that meeting was only announced that morning. So that was not a meeting that had been arranged like days or weeks prior. They announced that morning that he was going to fly to Paris and talk to the guy. And it was most certainly about this whole security topic, you know. Also NATO, you know, that's a big issue as well. It's not just the EU, it's NATO too. And then what are we going to do about supporting Ukraine if Donald Trump decides to stop US aid to Ukraine? Because that is the biggest chunk of military aid and financial aid that that Ukraine is getting. What if he just turns that off and decides it's over?
Right. So we've been looking at sort of the public German government's reaction. You have your ear close to the ground there in Berlin. What were the more private, off-the-record reactions from German politicians like? Do you have any sense of the vibes there?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to anybody, not just the political journalists, that they did not want this to happen. Everybody in the government had hoped for Kamala Harris to win, for sure, right? And now, I think there were probably some expletives thrown around when they saw what happened. And then they had to pick themselves up and, well, what are you going to do? You know, now you got to somehow make it work with this guy, despite this guy. Yeah, nobody was happy about it in the government. I have to say that because I don't know if you were going to talk about that too. Like there was just one of the major parties who was happy about it, who was very, very happy about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next. So let's go through that then. There are, of course, many different parties in Germany, as there are technically many parties in the United States, but none of them really are important besides the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yeah.
So one of the big consequences of Trump being elected in the U.S. is oftentimes U.S. elections have political follow-on effects besides security policy and economics and all this on the various parties in Germany and throughout Europe.
Right.
So the different parties would react to this differently. The Greens obviously do not want the drill baby drill president. But of course, there are parties like the Alternative for Deutschland, the Alternative for Germany, who might not be so disappointed, the CDU, center-right, but going further right. Do you just want to talk about some of the reactions of the different parties, maybe the ones that were happy about this?
Yeah, sure. So like you said, in the government, the Social Democrats and the Green Party pretty disappointed, but couldn't really say so very openly because they're in the government. Then the Liberal Democrats, the FDP, they were also unhappy, but it was interesting because they all said, well, we have to respect the American people. Like they were cautioning against any sort of criticism of like, how could they do that again? Mm-hmm. Not that anybody in the government said that, you know, but that was an interesting point. And that was somehow similar to what the Conservative Party said as well. Like, yes, they want to put up the next chancellor, right? So they are acting very statesmanlike. And so they basically said the same thing. They were like, yes, we need to cooperate and we need to strengthen Europe, all that. The leftist party was very harsh. They're in the opposition, so they can say whatever they want. And they're also on the far left, so obviously as far away from the Trump Republicans as you can be. And they were very, very harsh and said this is a catastrophe for the world, things like that. Then there is the aforementioned BSW, which, you know, was formed by people who used to be in the left, but it's not really a leftist party. It's more some sort, it's not really on the left-right spectrum, you know. They're more like authoritarian and populist.
Yeah, let's just stop right there. Just to remind people from the previous episode, the BSW, the Bundeszara Wagenknecht, she used to be the head of the left party, but she's adopted the strange, or maybe not strange, position of joining populism and sometimes a very right-wing populism with left-wing economics.
Yes.
And one of the issues which you might say puts her far on the right, besides being anti-immigration, is her support, her open support for Putin.
Yes.
And for a call to the end of the war in Ukraine, which actually puts her very squarely on a Trump side of politics, although she's very much a communist and a socialist in another respect. So, I mean, it's kind of funny that a party like this could exist in Europe, which it can, but it's hard to even figure out where she would fit on an American political spectrum. And that's one of the problems that we have in the U.S. of only having two basic choices between the Republicans and Democrats. You can't generate a BSW type thing.
Yeah, I mean, we have trouble putting her on the spectrum as well. It's a very new party that's very different from anything that we have known so far. And you're right, she used to be the head of the parliamentary like faction of the leftist party, and now she has her own party which bears her name, and
which is very Trumpish, I might say too.
So I was actually, when I saw the press release in the mailbox at work, I was like, I really wonder what they are gonna say. And they were very critical, actually. Yeah, they were like, no, Trump is bad and bad politics. And yeah,
was there a specific reason? Because of those two issues, they would support an anti-immigrant stance and a pro-Russian stance. Did they give any specifics, or was it just sort of one of these bland negative statements?
It was pretty general, yes. Okay. Yeah, it wasn't that detailed, no. Yeah, and that only leaves us with the Alternative für Deutschland, the AfD. They are the most right-wing party that we have in parliament. And
they're a pure right-wing party, unlike Budna Zarivaganknecht, which has weird leftist views too.
Yeah, I guess the AfD is less confusing. They're just right-wing, just that. And they were very, very excited about this. I actually listened to a radio interview with one of the party heads, Alice Weidel, and she was so happy about it. And she said, yeah, this could even be, you know, a role model for us because we want to make Germany great again and blah, blah, blah. And then the radio host said, but, you know, Donald Trump has, for example, announced that he's going to put these enormous tariffs on German products, like, you know, cars and all the other stuff we export to the US. This could really hurt the German economy. And she said, oh, you know, we have to give him a chance. basically saying like, oh, maybe it's not going to be that bad. She didn't want to engage on that issue at all. And yeah, I mean, that party is hoping that this is going to help them, you know, to see that this kind of politics actually worked to persuade a majority in the US. Maybe that's going to help them get more votes over here because voters might, you know, be motivated by that working out in America.
Yeah, and there has been a good deal of cross-pollination of these types of ideas. Various American political strategists have been flying over to Europe to both receive and give advice on some of these issues, and then similar advisors are heading over from Europe to the US to comment and learn from these movements in Europe. You mentioned the tariffs that Trump has announced. So let's move on to another point, which is the different specific policy issues that are important for Germany. And then maybe I'll just start with the big general point that both Germans, the German government, and Europeans are concerned with is generally Trump's unpredictability in decision-making, which keeps everyone on edge. If you can't make plans because you don't know what's going to happen, then you can't make plans, and then you're kind of left in this state of permanent uncertainty. Can you comment on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, that again, we all remember that from the time between 2016 or 2017 and 2021, right? In Trump's first term, it was the same for journalists, actually. Like every morning you woke up and you were like, what did he tweet to that tonight? Like, what did he come up with now? What did he watch on Fox News and then get excited about it? And of course, it was the same for politicians because you never knew if he steps in front of a microphone, what's it going to be this time? Is he going to come up with something completely new? Is he going to reverse something? And I mean, a lot of things did happen, like leaving the Paris Climate Agreement and like destroying the nuclear deal with Iran and a lot of stuff, you know. So we don't really know. And now it's probably worse just because the situation, especially the security situation in Europe, is worse because Russia started the war in Ukraine. That was not happening during Trump's first term. And Ukraine is really close. Like, for example, Kiev and Berlin is not that far, you know. And European countries like Poland and the Baltic states, which are even closer to all that that's happening and closer to Russia, are very concerned. What if Donald Trump says, I'm just going to let Putin do what Putin wants to do? I'm not going to help anybody. I'm not going to give any more weapons to Ukraine or any more money. What if he just overruns Ukraine and then thinks about what's next? You know, so you could imagine any kind of scenario and you just don't know if maybe it's going to happen. It seems as likely as not.
I'm happy you mentioned Poland and Ukraine and these wider issues, because I did read one article from Thomas Kleine Brockhoff on the German Council on Foreign Relations, who kind of started explaining how NATO and the EU might deal with this unpredictability when it comes to Trump on foreign policy, especially Ukraine. And he wrote this, which I'm going to read, which I thought was really interesting because we look at, for example, NATO and the EU as all of these different countries with all their different interests, and they are, and somehow they need to pull together. So this is what Kleine Brockhoff says. Given Trump, groups of countries on the continent will run off in different directions. At least three distinct pathways are emerging. There are those led by France who will aim for European sovereignty and distance themselves from the United States. Secondly, there are those led by Poland and likely including Germany who will accommodate Trump because of extreme security dependency. Thirdly, there are those led by Hungary who support Trump in search of populist Atlanticism. And I think that kind of really clearly sums up what we've been saying,
yeah,
that you have these different strands in European politics. You have this sort of French-led Macron effort for Europe to be more independent on security issues. Then you have countries like Poland, the Baltics, maybe now Finland and Germany, who are like, well, Russia's right at our border. We're going to accommodate whatever the US and whatever Trump wants to do because they have the biggest army. And then you have people like Viktor Orban in Hungary, who kind of sees himself as a Trump mini-me, who basically, you know, if Trump says we're going direction A, that's what he'll do. And if he's going direction B, he'll go that way. Do you think that's a pretty clear assessment of the strands, the paths for the future?
Yes, I think so. That's a very, very accurate analysis. And that's another problem because while everybody is saying we need to unite and we need to make Europe stronger and work together and speak with one voice, the very fact that Trump won the election actually makes that more difficult. Like I agree with Kleine Brockhoff there for sure, because yeah, the reaction from Viktor Orban was like, awesome, this is great. And everyone else was basically cringing at that, mm-hmm. you know, everyone else in Europe. And it's a bad timing as well, because we only had the European elections in June, remember? So the new parliament and the new commission is still in the midst of like getting to work, getting their priorities together, like what are we going to do? How can we work together? Who's going to deal with whom and stuff? And in the middle of all of that, now comes this news. And yeah, that's going to make it so much more difficult.
Yeah, one of the problems of the mega movement, Make Europe Great Again, is it can't be a mega movement because it's not nationalistic.
Right.
I mean, a mega Make Europe Great Again encompasses now, 27, 29 different countries. And so mm-hmm. it's hard to be purely nationalistic when you have such a group of people. Let's move on to the economy. Germany is struggling.
Yes.
Some argue it's in recession or a light recession. So certainly Trump's threats of 20% tariffs on things like German cars might be problematic for Germany. Trump has often talked about the fact that Europe in general and Germany in particular have huge trade surpluses with the US that Trump believes need to be counterbalanced. So let's just look at the economic side. What are German economists and business leaders thinking now?
Well, they have a negative outlook, of course, because if he does that, it's going to be very difficult to still sell products over there. I actually read an interview with an economist, I can't recall the name right now, it was in the Spiegel magazine, and he said, well, if he's going to slap it, for example, 20% tariff on European imports, but then, because that's something he talked about as well, if he slaps an even higher tariff on Chinese products, maybe in the end it's not going to be so bad for the Europeans. But that's not really something you can hope for, right? So it's definitely going to be more difficult. And you have to remember that a lot of big German companies also have factories in the United States. So maybe if you have a factory there, maybe you can weather it a little bit better, because then, for example, the cars that you build in the US and sell in the US are not going to be subject to those tariffs. But who knows if he's not going to make it more difficult to conduct business that way in some different shape or form, you know, that those are huge investments.
So again, we're back to the unpredictability point.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, what you said before is right. The German economy is already not doing very well. That is a huge issue. And even if Donald Trump doesn't really do that much, uncertainty is always really difficult for businesses, right? Because they need to make long-term decisions about investments and where to build factories and who to hire and all those things. And if you don't really know what's going to happen, you're going to hold back on that. And that alone is going to hurt the economy as well.
We did see in the States that the day after Trump was elected, with the stock market gains, the 10 richest Americans made something like $62 billion overnight.
Yay.
Which is interesting to think mm-hmm. about. That's a lot of dosh.
For sure.
Point four, and I don't know where the German public is on this, because things are changing, and that's climate and climate change and sustainability. I think one thing we can predict about the Trump presidency is that sustainability and climate change issues will not be a priority.
For sure.
But green issues are also becoming less and less popular in Europe and in Germany. So how do we start thinking through that little conundrum?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at opinion polls, at least in Germany, I can't speak to the rest of Europe, but in Germany, if you ask people specifically about climate change and the environment and stuff, they express very grave concern and they say they want things to be done and all that. But if you ask them openly, you know, those questions like, what are your top three concerns in general? Things like that. Like, climate change has dropped. It used to be at the very top. And then it slowly went down. And now things like the economy and general security and immigration and things like that are higher on that list. So people do care about it. They want something done about it, but it's not the most important issue anymore. You know,
one of these things, are you willing to give up your car or your old furnace in exchange for a greener planet? Most people say, well, it's too expensive. You know, don't talk to me about this. That's too complicated.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Like the government that had the Green Party in them now for 3 years hasn't figured out how to make it affordable for people. I don't know if you heard about this thing that they were initially planning on doing, this Klimageld, the climate money that was going to be paid basically to everybody depending. Well, basically, it's pretty complicated, but basically depending on your CO2 footprint, right? So that poorer people would get much more because they don't really cause that much
pollution.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't. Poor people don't emit more CO2 than rich people.
No, I mean, they don't go on plane rides. You know, they have no car or maybe one old car that doesn't use up that much gas and all that. You know, so poor people would have gotten more and rich people wouldn't have gotten anything, and that would have been a good way to like make the fight against climate change a little more socially acceptable, I think, but that didn't happen. Like, they wanted to do that, but it never happened. And instead, like, still in connection with Russia starting the war in Ukraine and the energy crisis that stemmed from that, energy prices are high, you know, and electric cars are expensive and all those things. So that's a difficult issue to address at the moment.
Do you think Trump's open opposition to climate change initiatives will strengthen the sort of green, not the party necessarily, but the green feelings in Germany, or weaken it, or have no change?
That's hard to say. I think it could be actually a little bit of both. Like, on the one hand, it could help the Green Party or the movement around that to get reinvigorated and be like, no, well, now we really have to fight, and now we really have to come together and do something. But on the other hand, I mean, the AfD, the right-wing party, they say the same thing. They're like, climate change, probably not real, super exaggerated, blah, blah, blah. Like, that could help them as well, you know? And I mean, the Conservative Party, who has been far ahead in the polls for a long time now and still is, they're like, yeah, climate change, sure, let's do something about it, but it's not the top priority. The top priority is the economy and then everything else.
So with a lot of these important policy issues, the sort of main takeaway from this part of our entire discussion about Trump and the German reaction to Trump, I think, is unpredictability on so many things.
Yeah.
And that unpredictability, and I don't know if it was planned this way or not, Trump's election victory, causally or not causally, was immediately followed by the collapse of the German traffic light or ample coalition between the SPD, whom we've discussed, the Greens, whom we've discussed, and lastly, the Free Democrats, which happened the next day, I believe, right?
Same night.
So any causal relationship or no?
Well, the funny thing is, I was in the office, and we knew that the government, like the main players of the three parties and of the cabinet, were going to meet that night, like the Wednesday evening. And we knew it was going to be like a tense meeting, and we don't know what was going to happen. But after the news came about the US election, everybody in the office was like, okay, that means they're going to pull themselves together, because they can't let everything explode when that just happened. But then they did. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just a coincidence time-wise, because that meeting had been scheduled for a while. I don't know why they put it on that day, because obviously the US election was also scheduled for a long time. But then again, nobody really thought that we would get the result that quickly, right? Because 4 years ago, it took like, what, 3 or 4 days, to be announced, to be called. And yeah, so then they met, and then within a few hours, it was over.
Yeah. Can you just quickly describe for an audience who hasn't been paying attention the reason for the collapse?
Well, so I'm just going to say that this government has had issues for a long time now, and they've been fighting a lot, especially about the budget for next year. Because if you want to put it very, very simple, the Liberal Democrats want to lower taxes and also not have higher public
spending. They don't want to have a budget they don't want to go into debt.
They don't want to go into debt.
A balanced budget.
Yeah.
Americans, a balanced budget.
Because we have a thing about that in our constitution, as you might know, and they are very serious about this. They don't want to go into more public debt. Where on the other hand, the Social Democrats and the Green Party said, well, we need really big investments into a lot of things, and we can't do that with this. It's called the Schuldenbremse, so the debt brake. We can't do it with that. We need an exception, and the Liberal Democrats said no way. And so this fight has been going on for months. And then apparently what happened on Wednesday night was they all met, and apparently the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, said, well, we need to decide on an exception from the debt brake for next year, or we're not going to have a budget. And Christian Lindner, the finance minister, who is also the head of the Liberal Democrats, said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then Scholz said, you're fired, basically. And that was the end of it. So it was a coalition government of three parties. Now it's only two parties, and the other ministers from the Liberal Democrats have left the cabinet, with one exception, the minister for traffic and digital things. I don't know how to translate that properly. He said, no, I'm going to actually leave my party and stay on my post. But everybody else is gone now. And
so the consequence is, the consequence is that either Scholz needs to survive a no confidence vote in, has that been scheduled?
No, it's not been scheduled. He said he wanted to do it on January 15th, but then the opposition and also the Liberal Democrats said that is way, way, way too late. We need to do that earlier. And the problem now is that the remaining coalition doesn't have a majority in parliament anymore. So if they want to pass anything, they need to either work with the Liberal Democrats again or with someone else. The only option is the Conservatives, because the other parties in the opposition are not going to vote on anything with them. They're too far apart. Yeah, so what needs to happen is basically this vote of no confidence, or it's actually called a vote of confidence, but he's going to lose it. And after that, our president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, has 21 days to decide on dissolving the parliament, which he is going to do. He technically doesn't have to, but all the times that this has happened before, the president did that. And then from the moment that he says, I have now dissolved parliament, there is 60 days. And within 60 days, the next election needs to be scheduled or needs to happen.
So there was a normal election scheduled for September of next year. So we're going to have that a little bit earlier.
Yes.
We talked about the top voting issues for Germans for these early elections coming up, and I think maybe we just talk about them again. Would you rate economic issues as one or immigration?
I think economic issues, yes, for sure.
And then
sure.
Maybe two, immigration or Ukraine?
Well, I mean, the thing with immigration is I believe it's only such a huge topic because the Conservative Party and the AfD have pushed it that much. You know, I mean, I know there's difficulties. I know some local authorities are struggling with, you know, accommodating the number of people who have come. And obviously it does cost a lot of money, you know, but I think it's only such a big issue because those parties decided to make it a really big issue. But yeah, I think those two do vie for the number two spot, like immigration and Ukraine. And I mean, they're connected as well, because we do have a large number of Ukrainian refugees.
And it's connected to the economy as well, at least the Ukraine issue with the high price of oil and gas.
Definitely, yeah.
You going to predict what's going to happen in the new elections?
Well, from today's standpoint, it seems pretty obvious the Conservatives are going to win. So Friedrich Merz, who is the head of the CDU and also the official candidate for chancellor, is going to be chancellor, I think. It looks like the most likely coalition is the Conservatives and the Social Democrats, which we had before. Yeah, I think that would be my guess. Looking at it from today, we're going to go back to that black-red coalition, and Friedrich Merz is going to be chancellor, and yeah.
Okay, well, lots of unpredictability in the world.
Yay.
Because of the Trump election and the collapse of the German government. But thank you, Christina Neuhaus, for giving us some predictability. We will have the traditional center-left, center-right coalition in Berlin.
Looks like it, yeah.
The Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats, who will return everything back to normal and predictability, which you Germans do like, don't you?
We do. Fingers crossed.
Christina Neuhaus, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. That was fun.
All right. And we'll talk soon about the elections in Germany, I hope.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support German-American friendship, why don't you visit us at our website, americatzentrum.de, where you can become a member and donate. The Americatzentrum is a nonpartisan and not-for-profit institution dedicated to strengthening the transatlantic relationship. The views and opinions expressed in the episode are those of the guests or the host, not the Americatzentrum. We take our nonpartisan mission seriously. Therefore, we do not take any institutional positions on politics or policy. Learn more about us, become a member, and donate at americatzentrum.de. Thanks for listening.